Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Thursday, the 12th of November. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, aid and better access to Europe are offered to African states in a bid to curb Europe's migration crisis. This is what one African diplomat is saying.
The migration is as a result of a failure of leadership on the part of African leaders. And at the same time, the European countries, they also have their own problems because they cooperated with the African leaders.
And in Nigeria, President Muhammadu Buhari has finally sworn in his new cabinet.
If you look at the ministers individually, you can hardly fault any of them. Most of them are accomplished in their own different areas. The cabinet is a fine blend of experience, accomplishment, and politics.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Sweden and Slovenia became the latest European countries to tighten their border controls on Wednesday in a bid to contain the unprecedented flow of migrants to the continent. Meanwhile, more than 50 European and African leaders are attending a two-day summit on the Mediterranean island of Malta to try and agree on a common migration strategy. Criticism of Europe was heard at this summit, with some delegates accusing the continent of supporting African dictators and spreading misleading information via the media. This report now by Sela Onako.
Enhanced collaboration, protection of refugees and an end to smuggling. Those were the words EU Commissioner for Migration, Dimitris Avramopoulos, used to describe the aims of the summit. With the high influx of refugees coming from countries like Syria and Afghanistan, Europe is now trying to stem the flow of migrants, especially those it sees as irregular economic migrants. Europe has even offered financial assistance to keep the people in Africa. Ethiopia is one of the countries which might benefit from this support. Speaking to DW, Tewolde Mulugeta, spokesman of Ethiopia's Office of Foreign Affairs, voiced his hopes for the meeting. The European Union Vice President came here recently and met with our foreign minister and other officials, he said. He spoke of the 1.8 billion euro fund the EU had allocated to help African leaders to tackle migration, and he hopes that the different groups can reach a common understanding. Dahiru Suleiman, a former Nigerian diplomat, was less optimistic in his expectations of the summit.
The migration is as a result of our failure of leadership on the part of African leaders. And at the same time, the European countries, they also have their own problems because they cooperated with the African leaders to allow them to start stealing money in their banks.
Suleiman explained that you can only stop people from leaving their countries if you solve Africa's economic problems. And today, many leave with the false impression that everything is better in Europe. Yet beyond the economy, many observers say that corruption, oppression and conflict are still the main factors forcing people to leave their homes. Eric Chinje, who heads the African Media Initiative, says that the media, particularly the European media, have an important role to play.
Because they are the ones who can change the nature of the debate. They must change it and put pressure on Angela Merkel, François Hollande and others to turn their focus towards governance, economic opportunities and those issues that matter to the migrants themselves. If the debate starts focusing on these huge issues, I think we will find some answers.
The leaders are planning to approve a plan of action later today. Of around 800,000 migrants who have reached Europe this year, about one quarter are from Africa.
Sela Onako reporting. One scheme for stemming the flood of refugees to Europe is the setting up by the European Union of a 1.8 billion euro trust fund for Africa. The money would go towards tackling the root causes of migration, poverty and conflict. My colleague Jane Ayeko asked Yves Pascoe from the European Policy Centre in Brussels how this initiative would differ from previous ones.
It's different because we have, perhaps for the first time, a clear link between migration and development policies. The trust fund, which is going to be launched, is in addition to what has already been given to some African states.
Now, most African refugees come from Eritrea and Ethiopia. These countries are labeled as dictatorships. Do we see the European Union collaborating with leaders that they have often called dictators?
The European Commission is still trying to maintain relationships with different public and political authorities. But at the same time, when the European Union knows that it is difficult to either negotiate or to establish relationships with some countries, they also prefer to channel the money through private initiatives.
Libya, like Sudan, is a transit country for most refugees from Eritrea and Ethiopia. In the case of Libya, we know that the European Union sometimes pays the country to keep away refugees from using its borders as transit point. Do we foresee something similar in the case of Sudan?
The European Commission, in particular the European External Action Service, are working extremely hard in diplomatic terms in order to try to bring around the table relevant and reliable stakeholders to discuss those issues.
Whereas majority of refugees are from Syria and Afghanistan, as well as other Central Asian countries, the European Union seems to be focusing more on African refugees. Why?
Well, I think that the European Union is now trying to sketch the big picture. We know that some parts of the world are subject to extremely unstable situations, and some of them are in conflict situations. But we have also to try to see the big picture and to understand and to acknowledge that other countries outside of this region, be it Syria or Afghanistan, are also facing some sort of instability. We have also to take into consideration that many situations are also driving people on the roads of exiles. And in order to avoid people escaping their countries because of the worsening of some situations, it is also a priority for the European Union and its member states to try to stabilize regions which are, say, a little bit weakened or which may fall into instability.
Yves Pascoe, Director of Migration and Mobility Policies at the European Policy Centre in Brussels.
News, analysis and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Nigerians elected a new president in March of this year. Now, in the middle of November, they have a new government. President Muhammadu Buhari swore in a 36-member cabinet on Wednesday and appointed himself head of the Powerful Petroleum Ministry. Buhari said he had taken his time when making the appointments because he wanted to make sure they were the right ones. Jane Ayeku asked Garba Kare, political scientist at the University of Abuja, whether the new cabinet contained any surprises.
There are a number of surprises, actually, but maybe pleasant surprises. If you look at the ministers individually, you can hardly fault any of them. Most of them are accomplished in their own different areas. I think the cabinet is a fine blend of experience, accomplishment, and politics.
So how different is the cabinet from those of his predecessors?
There are a number of differences. For the first time, I think governors and other political chieftains did not have much, if any, input in the nomination and appointments of the ministers. It was solely the responsibility of the president. That is one. And two, for the first time, there was a total absence of allegations of money changing hands during the ministerial screen. In the past, Nigeria was notorious, or Nigerian Senate, which had the responsibility of screening the senators, was notorious for allegedly collecting money from ministerial nominees in order to screen them. There was no such thing.
It has taken President Buhari more than 5 months to finally form a cabinet. Was the delay meant to send some kind of message to the new ministers?
I think he has attempted in the past to explain the delay. He said first that he received reports of the activities of government from his predecessor quite very late, and that there was a need for him to study the reports. And then many people have been saying that most of the appointees have been secretly going through a regime of tutelage and briefing on exactly what they are supposed to do. Therefore, we expect the ministers by now to be quite familiar and abreast of their responsibilities, and as the president charged them to hit the ground running, that is, to begin to perform immediately the Azum office tomorrow.
Garba Kare from the University of Abuja. And you can find that interview on our website, dw.com/Africa. To South Africa now, where 8 former police officers have been given prison terms of 15 years each after being found guilty of murdering a Mozambican taxi driver, Mido Marcia. Video footage showing the Mozambican being dragged behind a police truck through the streets of Johannesburg was broadcast around the world in 2013. Tuzo Kamalo reports.
Pronouncing the sentence at Pretoria High Court on Wednesday, Judge Bert Bam described the killing of Marcia as barbaric. He also condemned the accused for not showing any remorse throughout the trial.
It goes without saying that the community is entitled to protection against behavior of rogue police officers. Direct imprisonment is indeed the most appropriate sentence. Each of you are sentenced to 15 years imprisonment.
In 2013, the officers arrested Marcia for stopping his taxi at a prohibited area. The police, who allege he resisted arrest, tied him to the back of their van and dragged him at full speed, injuring him severely. The court also heard that instead of taking him to the hospital, the police officers took him to police cells at Daveyton Police Station, where they brutally assaulted him, causing his death. Independent Police Investigation Directorate, IPID, welcomed the 15-year sentences. Robbie Raburabu is the IPID spokesperson.
It will obviously be a lesson, because I don't think anyone believed that the sentence would be as it is today.
Mido Marcia's family also welcomed the sentences, although their lawyer, Jose Nencimento, said they expected life sentences, which could have seen the officers spending 25 years behind bars.
The family would have preferred a life sentence, but we have to divorce emotions from facts and from the interpretation of the law. What this case does show us is that we have a rule of law. If you transgress and breach that law, you will face the consequences.
Francis Makwakwa, a Mozambican vegetable vendor in Johannesburg, received the news with jubilation.
A good lesson. A harsh sentence, was like they are criminal also. Everyone can see a corpse, an individual person, you will see a lesson.
South African national Tom Kavuno also voiced his support for the harsh sentences.
It's a learning curve.
It's a learning curve for every police officer now, that you must handle your work accordingly, so that you mustn't make another person suffer.
Meanwhile, families of the 8 police officers have indicated their intention to appeal the sentences.
To Zokomalo in Johannesburg. And now, here on Africa Link, a second chance to hear this week's instalment of Crime Fighters.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, welcome to the second episode of our series, Crime Fighters, The Radical Journey. In our story, the young officers Jude and Brenda are trying to unravel the mystery behind the death of Zora Kassim. Zora was the daughter of a very influential politician in Kululaland, and she's just carried out a suicide bombing on a shopping mall. Last time, we found out that Cadet Inspector Jude used to date her. His colleague, Inspector Brenda, knows. But they haven't told their supervisor, Commissioner Cletus. The police have been trying for some time to capture a terrorist warlord called Scambo. He leads a group called Sword Sages, who are notorious for recruiting disaffected young people. Could he be connected to the latest suicide bombing? We'll try to find out in this episode, More Than Meets the Eye.
Morning, Inspector Brenda, Jude.
Good morning, Mr. Commissioner, sir.
I'll be brief. The most important thing we need to clarify is, was Zora Kasim forced to carry out the attack or did she do it willingly? So far, the investigation suggests that she wouldn't have hurt a fly. There has to be an explanation.
I'm sure she was forced to do it.
Excuse me?
What he means is we need to establish whether Zora was connected to any terrorist groups. That's what Sages, for example, before we can work out her motive. But I think we should also consider that she might have been working on her own. Or she may have had an unknown accomplice.
Friends or family, for instance, or some other terrorist group.
True. We can't rule that out. It's highly unlikely that she was working alone. We need to know who she's been in contact with, and we also need to put a stop to Warlord Scambo's activities. What are we missing?
Why don't I go and question the young girl who was arrested last week? Remember? Similar age to Zora, similar circumstances, but her bomb failed to explode. Maybe she knows something about Zora.
And I'm going to visit some of the popular youth hangouts, especially in the underprivileged areas like Biloka and Mekiri. I hear there are some people in these areas who are advocating extremist views. Yesterday, we had a briefing from the anti-terrorism squad. They confirmed that recruitment is ongoing in these districts.
Excellent. I want a report on my table first thing tomorrow morning.
Sir.
Yes, Jude.
No!
Take cover! Get down! Everybody, get down! We were very lucky, Jude. That suicide bomber could have killed a lot of people this morning. Driving right through our gate and detonating a bomb outside the station. I never thought they'd be so bold.
You're right, Mr. Commissioner. Thank God the security guards kept shooting and stopped him before he reached the building.
Look at the windows. All the glass has shattered from the impact of the explosion. It could have been an absolute disaster. Thank heavens no one died. Come in.
Ah, Patricia, it's you. Come in.
The sergeant directed me to come here.
Sir, this is Patricia Fusu, Zora Kasim's friend.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Patricia. Take a seat. Tell us about your friend.
Well, Zora was a very loving and caring person. She was quite introverted, I suppose, but she always wanted to help. She was a good friend to me.
Did she have problems at home? Did she say or do anything that suggested she was distressed?
Not at all. We know all the same people. I would have known if she had had problems. When we went together, she was mostly reading or watching movies or doing stuff on the internet.
What were her interests? Did she have any male friends?
Yes. She did.
What about her extended family? Did she have any role model who may have had a questionable character?
No, I don't think so.
And I guess she didn't have any financial problems?
No, sir. She was never short of anything. Her parents gave her all she needed. And she was generous, too.
Okay. Thank you for coming, Patricia. Jude will walk you back. Do please let us know if you remember something or if you come across anything at all that doesn't make sense to you.
Yes, sir. I'll be sure to do that.
Inspector Brenda, I'm the chief warden here at the women's prison. I'll be assisting you. Please take a seat.
Thank you.
The guards will bring in the two women you asked to see. One of them is 20. She goes by the name of Joyce, and she has two kids. The other is just 15, Beatrice. She claims she was kidnapped. You will see them one after the other.
I appreciate your help. Thank you.
I'll be out here if you need me.
Hello, Joyce. I'm Inspector Brenda from the Regional Police Headquarters in Takoka.
Hello.
I'd like to ask you a few questions. It's to help me with another investigation. First of all, do you know the woman in this picture? Have you ever seen the woman in this picture? She's the suicide bomber who carried out the recent attack on the Domingo Mall.
No, I've never seen her. Is there some reason why I should?
Okay, Joyce. Let's start again. Tell me about yourself. Joyce, why did you join the Sword Sages?
You people think you know everything. Your colleagues from the police murdered my husband in cold blood. Called him a terrorist. Imagine the hardship and humiliation we suffered.
I understand that you feel wronged. But why did you decide to resort to this kind of violence? Putting on a bomb belt to kill innocent people?
Where were these innocent people when my innocent husband was murdered? I can't stand it that my family has to live in poverty and fear.
Do you believe your husband was innocent?
What do you mean, do I believe? Of course he was. He was innocent. And when he died, we had no one to turn to, apart from Warlord Scambo. He sent one of his men to find us, and he took care of us.
What did he want in return?
I promise I would repay his kindness, because he promised me my children would be safe and well looked after, even when I'm gone.
But why would Scambo help you if he didn't know your husband?
I'll protect my children with my life. What woman wouldn't? I'll never let them live in fear.
Are your children safe now?
Social justice is what I want. That's all we want. And bad governance will be dealt with in the only possible way.
Joyce, you didn't answer my question. Are your children safe now? If you had died, what effect do you think it would have had on them? It doesn't help them that you're in prison now, does it?
All I know is that I'm sorry the bomb didn't go off when I pulled the cord.
And that's all for today. The police team is still looking for a breakthrough in the investigation into Zora's death. And the officers have been through a lot in one day. Will Jude find any clues when he visits the youth hangout? Join us in our next episode to see how things unfold. In the meantime, you can visit our webpage, dw.com/crimefighters. Or join us on Facebook. Bye for now.
And the crime fighters return here on Monday on Africa Link. A reminder of our top stories. The European Union offers African states aid and better access to Europe in exchange for helping to curb unprecedented migration. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari swears in his new cabinet. And 8 former police officers in South Africa have been given jail terms after being found guilty of the murder of a Mozambican taxi driver. We welcome your comments on this programme, either in a text message to country code 49160957595510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. As always, thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.